I'm Peter Medlin, and you are listening to Teacher's Lounge. And if this is your first time hearing our show, I've got great news. It is based on a really simple idea that we've all had teachers in our lives who helped us become who we are today. And every educator we have on this podcast, whether a teacher, coach, or professor, is nominated by the folks who listen. So we want you to be a part of the show with us. Please tell us about the educators who've inspired you and any folks in your community, maybe, who deserve a spotlight. Please email us with your nominations at teachersLounge@niu.edu. And today on the show, it is my conversation with Elaine Hershenberger. Back in 1975, Elaine co-founded Woman Space in Rockford and recently retired from her role as executive director. Woman Space is an interfaith organization that offers groups and classes on art, spirituality, and personal growth for folks of all ages. And Elaine has led a fascinating life. She's a Catholic nun with the School Sisters of St. Francis. She was a classroom teacher, and she's devoted the last 50 years of her life to building a space where women can feel comfortable exploring their creativity and their spirituality and connecting with each other. And we talked about why she and her co-founder, Dorothy Bach, started Woman Space, the early years when they were meeting in a little apartment where they were also living, and how it's evolved over the decades. Now that she's retired, about how she's been reflecting on her life and her career. And we talked about how finding your people, finding a community, feels more important and yet more difficult now more than ever. And Elaine tells us about an educator and mentor who's had a huge impact on her life and the emotional and really intense time they got to spend together last year. You know, my boss always jokes with me that after every episode, I say, man, I think this is our best one yet. But truly, I had such a lovely time talking with Elaine, and I think it's best to just get right into our conversation. So here's my time with Woman Space co-founder Elaine Hershenberger, and we start off talking about life's unexpected teachers.
Some of my friends are big into feeding wildlife and stuff that comes up to their doors and all. And it's like, you know, sometimes a teacher has a big bushy tail, or sometimes it pecks at your window, and sometimes, you know, it comes over for a pet. We need to just be open to where the learnings are coming from and to be grateful for the various teachers in our lives, for sure.
Yeah, even the idea of like, people are things that we learn from. The animal thing was making me think about, like, I'm a big trail runner. So both me and my dad, and actually I'm fortunate enough to where pretty much every weekend I still get to, like, go for a run with my dad in the woods.
Oh, my God, that's great.
Which is amazing. I do not take it for granted at all. And just the fact that he's such a machine, that he's almost 70 years old and he's still capable of keeping up and more with me running through the woods. But anyway, like, I, you know, there's a lot of times where we're running through the woods. Think about this time of year right now where it's so beautiful and we have such a pristine snow on the ground and how beautifully it falls on the trees and stuff. And that, you know, you see like a deer that run by, or you'll spot deer in the woods. And I do feel like those are some of the points in my life where I feel the most connected to the world, but also like to myself. And so, like, I could definitely say that those furry tail guys, those little deer, have also taught me a lot, you know, whether or not they knew it or not.
Absolutely. I totally understand that.
So you mentioned, I mean, you've been retired for is it a couple months now, Elaine?
Couple months. You would hardly notice it because I still find myself gravitating over to Woman Space fairly often, because I'm still in the process of kind of taking information from here and transferring it to various people there. So I'm kind of serving as a consultant for this year.
Right.
But I also, like on mornings like this, I also really love that it's like the day is really mine to choose whether I, you know, want to go out into the frigid weather, and even though it's just a mile down the road, trek that way. Or if no, today's a day when I'm just going to stay here and do some writing, or, you know, I'm going to go have lunch with a friend. There's a whole mentality that does not come easily to me. I'm very, very work-oriented, have been all my life. And so trying to take that little, okay, I have things I must do into what is it I want to do today? That is a more challenging transition than I expected.
Right. Isn't it strange how having technically less on your schedule can feel more overwhelming sometimes?
Absolutely. That's a very profound way of saying it. Yes. It's like, first of all, the decisions get more, more personal and more challenging, I think. It's like, how, at the end of this day, how am I going to feel about, have I wasted my time? Have I been creative? Have I been productive, but not obsessively so? It's like that whole balance thing is just,
right. And now it's up to you, right? Like before, you could be like, oh, it was a busy day. I was working on this stuff.
Anybody else.
Maybe that's it. Maybe we need to.
Troubles beyond measure. Anyhow, yeah.
Yeah, it's tough. I remember having these conversations, actually similar. I just brought them up with my dad, who a couple of years ago retired from a place that he had been at well over 30 years, and just how long it took to kind of like separate himself from that and from those, from that place. And I was thinking about that for you, where you obviously co-founded Woman's Space, were there 50 plus years. You
right.
also lived there for decades, right?
I did. I actually lived in the building for, I figured it out the other day. I think it was like the first 28 years. Dorothy and I, who were the co-founders, actually had rooms in that building. And so we lived there. And so it was really pretty funny in the beginning. You know, people would come to Woman's Space for classes and discussion groups and films and all that kind of stuff. And they'd walk in the front door and say, oh, is this Woman's Space or is this your home? It's like, yes, all of the above. And so it really did create an ambiance of Woman's Space is like coming home. And there are so many people who to this day will say that when they come up the driveway and park, it's like, oh, I can be here. And it's not just because it was our home at that time, but it's because what we consciously do is to try to make a space that is simple, comfortable, beautiful, welcoming, non-judgmental, creative, encouraging. It's like all of those things are elements to it. So I feel like in terms of how I approach and how we approach education is like, it's really peer-to-peer facilitation. It's like the teacher is the teacher, but is also the learner. And that is one of the things I think that has been true about my being an educator for more than half a century now, that it's just something that I know I learn best when that has been gifted to me. And that's something that I try to emulate when I'm working with other people. You know, I look back at the people that directly influenced me when I was a young person. I do remember being young. Actually, one of my high school classmates sent a message to me on Facebook today. I had a birthday 2 days ago. Duh. Math is not my strong suit. And I turned 83. And I said to this classmate from high school, I said, I am way too young to be this old. And it's like that mix between how you are inside and how you perhaps are presenting yourself or experienced by others on the outside are not necessarily the same. My own grandma lived to 101, and my mother lived to 104. And I remember asking my grandmother once, she finally ended up in the nursing home that was kind of across the lawn from Woman's Space. And I went over there one day and I said, "Grandma, what does it feel like inside?" And she said to me, I think she was about 98 at the time. She said, "Elaine, if I don't look in the mirror, I feel like I'm 30. And it's like, yeah, I get that. Now that I'm getting up into those advanced years, I totally understand that. So anyhow, by the way, as you can see, I can go off on tangents. So just draw back in when you need to.
I always tell people that, so my grandfather was in radio too. He was did like high school sports announcing and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I had an uncle that was like a classic rock DJ. And then my older brother, Troy, is a ELCA Lutheran pastor. And So I would say, like, I come from a long line of people who enjoy the sound of their own voice. So, you know what I mean? Like, you don't have to worry about feeling like you're talking, because I'm gonna reciprocate that.
Okay, that's good. That's a pact that we have here.
But, yeah. But anyway, you were talking about how you feel inside. I have found, again, from a different perspective, where I'm 29 this year. I'll be 30 next year, next birthday. And I've found that, especially over the past couple of years, I think it's just a matter of feeling like you know yourself better at this age, right? Mm-hmm. That, like,
absolutely.
Oh my gosh. Like, it's a relief to be 29. You know what I mean? Like, I feel so much more, there's less pressure, it feels like, almost, than being like, 18, 19, 20. Like, I don't feel like
absolutely.
I need to be cool anymore.
Yeah.
I can just be myself, you know
just
what I mean?
Be, yeah,
but it takes
exactly.
a long time to figure out what exactly that means and, you know, ongoing, obviously.
You get to be fully Peter now.
Well, whatever that means, right? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so in the last couple months, though, you've had, I think that I was reading something that you had written, or I don't know if you did another interview about retirement or something like that, but you talked about continuing to be more Elaine every day, right? Getting to know yourself outside of just the context of Woman's Space.
You know, over the course of your lifetime, you know, you take various tests and personality profiles and, you know, the different,
what letters you are or whatever.
Yourself. Exactly. And so, you know, are you an ISFP or are you an ENTJ or, you know, are you a 4 on the Enneagram, which I am? It's very special.
No one's like, oh, yeah, I'm the most common one.
Yeah. Or, you know, it's sort of like, okay, so you gather all of that information and it's like, how does that really change anything? Well, one of the things it does is it kind of gives me a better sense of humor about myself. I'm a very reflective person, and I'm also a jokester. And so I feel like all of this knowledge about who this real Elaine is kind of like an inside joke, and I don't have to put it out there, but I'll recognize patterns and stuff. And it's like, oh yeah, there she goes again. Or, you know, oops, I'm doing that thing again. And not being ashamed and not being embarrassed and not being overly proud. It's just like, okay, I am the mix, just like you are a mix. And isn't it fun that we get to travel through this life together? I have to say, you know, recently I have had 8 former students search me out. One of them was a junior high student of mine, and 7 of them are students from Driscoll High School in Addison.
From, and, you know, 50 plus years ago.
One of them, Randy, he's the junior high one. I used to teach a journalism class to my 7th and 8th graders. And I had a different name. Do you know that I'm a nun? I don't know
yes.
if you know that. Okay.
Yeah. No, I did. Yeah.
Okay. So, So I'm not exactly, because I had a different name when I taught him. I used to be Sister Alexis Marie, which was kind of not an awful name.
No.
I think possibly the year he graduated, maybe our order changed and we were able to take back our own names. So he probably at some point put the name Elaine Hershenberger together, and he must have searched me out or something on the internet. I don't know. Anyhow, so one day at the front door of Woman's Space, this guy shows up, and among other things, he had saved the little reporter journalism badge that I had made for these kids when they were in seventh and eighth grade. And he said, "I'm here to do a report." It cracked me up. I could not believe that this guy, you know, found me and stuff. So we've become good friends, and I know his wife and his kids and his grandkids now. So that was fun. But then through Woman's Space, a couple of my former students from Driscoll High School in Addison have either moved to Rockford or are friends of people who've moved to Rockford. And so the last 2 years in particular, I've been reconnecting with these women who were teenagers when I was in my late 20s, 29 through 32, I taught at this high school. And it's amazing. The conversations that we have now are largely about the things that we learned from one another when we were in that environment, but we were not necessarily in the classroom. My classroom was really fun because I happened to be the art teacher there. At Driscoll, we even had a separate entrance. They had to come through the outside and down the sidewalk to get into the art studio. So we were kind of our own little art club, if you will. And that was fun. But the place that I felt was the most rich and learning experience besides the art studio was that Dorothy and I, who were the founders of Woman's Space, were actually also the drama department at Driscoll. And so we did directing of plays and stage sets and, you know, had our group of stage managers and our group of singers and all that kind of stuff. And I swear that is probably the most profound place where both I and they remember life lessons being just abounding. It outside of class time, you know, it was all extracurricular, but it was profound. And actually, the older brother of one of the young women that has found me, he was a year ahead of these girls. And he and his wife came up recently, and we also had drama experiences, if you will. Yeah. And it's like, oh my God, you know, how our life changes when we are fully engaged with somebody else in a learning situation that is not necessarily academic, but is profoundly related to becoming good humans.
Yeah, I think that makes sense, right? Like, especially for theater, where you're still a teenager, people are still very young, but that format gives you a bit of a shortcut to vulnerability, right? Like, even if it's not your words, you know,
exactly.
getting to practice.
Yes.
You get to practice being vulnerable in a way that you might not be otherwise, or you might not feel comfortable with your friends or your teacher or whatever people in your life, which is that I find that like on, on this show, like I said, we have a lot of classroom teachers on, and we do end up having a lot of, I think, art and music. And also, you know, we've had theater teachers on there, and that always makes sense to me that those teachers feel like they are able to connect with their students on that kind of emotional level. When we have like a high school math teacher, I'm always like, that's fascinating. How you like really connecting with someone and, you know, feeling like you learn so much about yourself and the world while also learning like slope intercept form. I'm like, that's impressive. That's fascinating too. How is that, you know?
Absolutely. One of the things, and you know, how do I want to say this? Woman Space is an interfaith organization. I happen to be, as I said, a Catholic sister, but Woman Space is not a Catholic organization. But it is an organization that certainly promotes religious or spiritual values and stuff like being good humans, which of course is really challenging these days with what, never mind, I won't go into what's going on.
Empathy could feel like it's in short supply.
Yeah, no kidding. And so being a sister, I happen to also be a Franciscan sister. And St. Francis is kind of a universal saint that everybody really appreciates. You know, you often see him with birds and wolves.
Animals, right?
Stuff like that, yeah. But one of the more profound things that has been very influential in my life is a quote that he said to his brothers, you know, back when he was on this side of the veil. And he said, you know, preach the gospel every day. If necessary, use words. And I love that. I just love that. It's like live the way you are so that your life becomes the lesson. And that, when I look back at the people who have been most influential in my own life, I have to say, I look at people who I observed in whatever way, whether they were a speaker at a conference or whether it was a cashier at the Schnucks or if it was a profound retreat director that I had or an English teacher. It's like, you know, look at how they live their lives. That's the education that I want to bring in and be part of my own life. And that's how I try to live. So.
Yeah. I know that a couple months ago, before your retirement, you guys had a celebration, the Honoring Our Foremothers event. That kind of reminds me of that. And I was thinking about that when I was reading about it. I feel like that it's a little bit like what I feel like the show is trying to be at its best, right, about honoring the people who've taught and shaped our lives and things like that. Can you tell me about that event that you guys did?
Oh, my God. That was so wonderful. Actually, when we had our 35th anniversary, we chose to do the 35th and the 50th, both in the same location. And we chose the Log Lodge down by the Rock River, the YMCA's Log Lodge, and which is kind of a nice gathering spot. You know, you get the beautiful ambiance of the river in the background and also the proximity of the women's suffrage centennial sculpture, which I want to talk about a little bit after I finish this story. But we chose that spot because, first of all, the idea of a river flowing through the city is like a river flowing through our lives. You know, you never step in the same place of the river, even though you look like you're in the same place. It's different water. It has moved on and stuff. So the symbolism of the river, I think, is really important. And what we did in both of those instances was to call upon the names of women and men, but primarily women. It was honoring our foremothers, who have been part of this organization, either right from the very beginning when we started or through the years. And they don't have to have had any title. They don't, you know, it wasn't just board members or presidents or directors or staff, although those people were all, you know, certainly influential and named. But the belief that I have and that many of our women have is that the energies of the people who have been in our lives continue to be around us and surround us throughout our life and help us with decisions or with directions or with our creativity. And so naming them and naming perhaps what influence they had in our lives is a way of saying, you are here. You are here with us. I truly believe that. Actually, I think there are a lot of women and men who are spirit guides for me and for all of us, but I'm talking about mine, that it's like, okay, they may have passed on so that I can't see them right now, but they are clearly still present to me. So anyhow, our foremothers event was partially the naming of these people. And then it was also recognizing that I, as a leader, am transitioning and that we're bringing in new leadership. So one of the symbolic things was I had it hanging in my office at Woman Space. I'm known for having art all over the place. And I had kind of a wand and kind of a scepter. I had a couple, you know, things that looked like symbolic power symbols, mostly arty. And so, you know, on stage, I officially handed one over to Nicole Landreth, who's our new executive director.
The peaceful transfer of power.
Peaceful transfer of power, yes. And no electoral college fuddling around with it.
That's right.
And so, you know, those kinds of rituals and symbols are so important. The campus at Woman Space itself is very conducive to calling on spirits and to being in nature in a beautiful way. We have 7 acres. We actually purchased 7 acres back in the year 2000, which was our 25th anniversary. And we have our exquisitely beautiful gardens, which are entirely maintained by volunteers. So those create wonderful spaces for ritual.
The labyrinth.
Our labyrinth, which we created, we finished it in 2003 after 3 years of backbreaking labor. But it has become such a symbol for not only Woman Space, but I think for Rockford. We have so many visitors to our labyrinth. People literally come from all over the country because we're on the National Labyrinth Registry. And so people who are searching that out will come and walk our, it's our 72-foot diameter, and then we have a perimeter around that, so it's even bigger than that. So we have created ritual spaces. Another space, and this gets back to near the Log Lodge, another space that we were very involved in creating along with other organizations, but Woman Space kind of took the artistic leadership of this, is the Rockford Women's Suffrage Plaza, which we created to celebrate the passage of the 19th Amendment granting women's suffrage. So part of our foremothers event was after we did our ritual within the Log Lodge, we then processed out. Everybody had a little tea light candle, and we processed out and circled the 15-foot high mosaic tower and had a musical interlude and a time for meditation. It was a very uplifting experience. And connecting is the first word in Woman Space's mission statement. It's connecting, empowering, creating, and transforming our world one woman at a time. And boy, that connecting is something that is truly, truly important to us, bringing people together. I'm trying to finish a book that I'm writing about the Woman Space experience. And part of what I'm on right now, trying to get the right words to bring this together, is at Woman Space, we have so many people who may have gravitated there at a time in their life where they really needed to find a community or to find a connection or to find purpose or to come up with an answer to some challenge that's going on in their lives. And so they come from various places, emotional places is what I mean, and different ages and different religions and stuff. And they all come for their own reason. But besides having the interaction with me or with Dorothy or with the staff there, which is usually the first way people get connected, is, you know, you have a conversation. Then we invite them into participating in an event or, you know, helping with we used to do bake sales and stuff like that, or community service event. You know, we used to do food boxes for single parent families headed by women. But they would then become part of a larger group and find friends. And I cannot tell you a number, but I know the number is huge, of people who have found what they now consider their best friend through Woman Space. And it's like, that is so satisfying. It's
like, that's everything.
We did not necessarily say, hey, come and, you know, you'll meet some women that really mean something to you. But it is so satisfying to set up the environment where those kinds of connections happen. It's so heartwarming. And boy, if that isn't an education, I don't know what is. So,
to me, my perception is that it feels like people are searching for community now more than ever, but it's also harder than ever to reach them, you know, or to find a place that is, you know, people talk about like third spaces, meaning a space that's not your house and a space that's not your work. For a lot of people, that's church. For a lot of people, it can be something else. But I was thinking about Woman Space in that framework, right, as a place that you can learn and connect with people, and that it feels like those type of places feel more essential than ever, but also just it feel more rare than ever. Maybe it's always been rare to find those third places, but the need with technology and everything else that makes us feel disconnected from the world and from ourselves feels more essential to me now.
Absolutely. And I'm so glad you brought up that thing about the third space, because that's exactly what we are trying to be. And I understand the new staff, which, by the way, I am so excited about the women who are now carrying on the work of Woman Space. I periodically, you know, kind of just observe what's going on. And I like the way they converse with one another and the way they're envisioning new gathering spaces. But they have a new program called Open Doors at Woman Space, ODW, and other things like creative co-work cafes. Those are the kinds of things that are so encouraging, because people are isolated. And isolation, I think, is so deadly. So it doesn't mean that we have to go out all the time, but it does mean that we need to have something that connects us to others who are on similar paths. And God knows we have a lot of diversity in terms of age, wealth, religious background, education, all those kinds of things. But when you're sitting and talking with somebody or being with somebody side by side while you're doing an activity, it's amazing how things that might look like barriers are not. They just fall away. And laughter or tears or just sweat, you know, will take its place there. So anyhow.
Yeah, as I say, it seems you know a thing or two about trying to curate those third spaces and create a place that is welcoming for everyone. I mean, I think about how like ritual can be a shortcut to a lot of those things, right? Like it can help set an atmosphere for people to connect with each other. And I, you know, I talked about, you know, your own experience as a nun and your Catholic background and everything. I grew up in like a Southern Baptist tradition, which was very, at least the way I experienced it, was very casual. Like it wasn't a church where people dressed up. It wasn't a place where there was a big choirs and ornate dress and things like that. But I mentioned my brother is now an ELCA Lutheran pastor, which is also kind of something that we had as a part of our childhood too. But his is, you know, they have these ornate, beautiful vestments. They have their, you know, incense and incredible, like, you know, Bach cantatas and music to really kind of get you in the headspace to feel connected, right?
Absolutely,
And about what that can look like for a place like Woman's Space that is, you know, interfaith and that everyone is welcome. And so, you know, you to kind of, you know, create things that feel like, you know, again, that despite whatever differences or diversity that we come in with, that everyone feels connected to is a fascinating probably something that is a challenge to curate a space like that.
It is. And one of the delightful things is because of our beautiful and welcoming campus, we've had a lot of different kinds of rituals there. We've had many weddings of, you know, different types. We've had traditional Christian. We've had I can't even name the different kinds, but I know that each of them has brought their own traditions, whether it's ritual garb or how they approach it or who conducts it or, you know, whatever. But they have brought a diversity and a beauty to our space. One of the things that I just flashed on was some years ago, probably it might have been around 2015 or 16, we had a group of, I think there were 8 to 10 Buddhist monks who came and did a puja, which is like a prayer fire ceremony, around our fire pit. And they also did a sand mandala painting and played their, I don't know what those very long horns are. They, you know, they're huge and they reach the ground and stuff. You know, we had that there. We've had meditation groups and drumming groups. It is such a diversity. I am thrilled that people know and recognize that this space is open to that kind of experience and no one is excluded. Anyhow, oh my God. This, by the way, this conversation is very fun. I am enjoying
good. I'm so glad that you are.
Yeah, this is good. I'm trying to think what else I might want to say, or do you have any other questions?
I do. Yeah. I wanted to ask you a little bit about the founding and a little bit about kind of what drove you and Dorothy to create it and kind of
I'd love to talk about that.
The gap that you guys were thinking of at the time that you wanted, a space that you wanted to make that didn't exist, and kind of how that fed into what was going on at the time. Okay. I've heard you talk in interviews a little bit or write a little bit about, you know, things going on at the time about second wave feminism and ERA campaign, all that stuff that was going on at the time.
All of the above, yes. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, this will only emphasize how old I am. but that's okay. Actually, you know, going back to when I talked about how important my connection with my Driscoll students was, that was a truly transformative high school in ever so many ways. Interesting, by the way, parenthetically, it does not exist anymore. And I absolutely loved my students and the faculty and the group of women that I was living with. Dorothy and I, by the way, both being Franciscan sisters, we lived with four other sisters in Glen Ellen and commuted out to Addison. But in the year 73, it was either late 72 or early 73, I think it was 73, our principal, who was a Christian brother named Dennis Murphy, decided that he wanted us to have a faculty in service on the topic of futures, because Alvin Toffler had just written the book called Future Shock. And he was kind of trying to articulate the rapidity of change that was about to engulf our nation, which God knows that certainly happened. And so Dennis, our principal, said, you know, I think this is something that we as a faculty really ought to look at and stuff. So the kids had the day off, and the faculty, we had some kind of a presentation in the beginning. I don't remember that part, but I do remember that he then said, I want you to break into groups, and I want you to find other faculty members that you can work with, who you share some values with, and I want you to create something on paper that does not exist that you think should exist. So at that time, there were several of us who were, I like to call us emerging feminists at the time. Back in 72, I finally, you know, I think about myself and sort of like, oh, I finally see feminism is the radical idea that women are people.
Radical. Still pretty radical.
It is pretty radical, which is so sad. But anyhow, and so there were some other women on the faculty. And I actually think I have this memory of this one guy who I think was part of our group. I have to check back and see if I can track that down. But anyhow, we decided that one of the things we would like to see is a network of women's centers stretching all across the United States, where women could come together and tell their stories to one another, receive support, be creative, not be judged, and the other thing that happened at that time in history was there was another, it may have been the first, I don't know, oil crisis. And we envisioned that the network of women's centers could be set up in old Standard Oil gas stations because they were going to
Wow.
Yeah. So that was the thing. And I did an oral history presentation on this a couple years ago at Woman Space. And I have the old Standard Oil logo and stuff. And it was sort of like our envisioning was, wouldn't it be cool if this could be all across the nation? So that was a very fun faculty in service. So we finished and we went home and, you know, life picks up and you're teaching and stuff. And so I think it was the weekend after that, We were sitting around our kitchen table, and either I said or Dorothy said, we both claim it, you know, that would be a lot more fun to do than continuing to teach in a high school, even though I absolutely love the high school. And I was like, I wonder if we could do that. And so we started talking about it with some of our sister friends and some other women. And it was like, you know what? Let's see if we could find any way that we could start doing that. And it, just to make that long story short, I learned how to write a grant, and we did receive a grant from the Illinois Humanities Council. I'm not sure when the Humanities Council started. I think it was right around 1974. And I think Woman Space may have been one of their first grantees. I'm not 100% sure, but I was looking at something recently about Illinois Humanities Council, and they started right around that time. Anyhow, we got a small grant. I think we got like $8,700. And that allowed us to engage speakers. We did three big programs. So what we envisioned was, how do we get this concept of creating a women's community into the public? So we looked at where could we do that? And we were living in a Chicago suburb at the time. And it was like, Chicago has a lot of stuff and we could get swallowed up. But the School Sisters of St. Francis happened to have this big piece of property in Rockford. And we wondered if we could get cheap rent there. That was basically the reason we did that. Plus, Dorothy had at one point in her life been on the faculty of Boylan High School.
Okay, and yeah.
So it was on the first faculty, and she actually designed and opened the art department at Boylan High School. And she said, you know, I have former students who are now young adults in Rockford. And so we thought, let's see if Rockford would work. And indeed, at that time, Rockford didn't hold a big appeal to me. I didn't know anything about Rockford. But I came up a year before Dorothy, and I was working for the sisters at Mount St. Francis at our provincial house. And I started to go around in the evenings, and I visited with a lot of different women's groups. I went to church circles. I went to AAUW. There was an Active Now group, National Organization for Women, the League of Women Voters. You know, I kind of just went and said, can I talk to you about this idea that we have? And 100% of the groups that I talked with were interested in what we were planning. And so in 1975, as I said, we got this grant from the Humanities Council, and we did three big programs called Images of Women Past. And then the second program was Images of Women in the Present, and then Images of Women for the Future. And people started to know that we were doing this kind of programming. The other interesting thing is we did not have a big location at the time. We were renting, like I said, we thought cheap rent. We rented a little two-room apartment from the sisters. And so at night, we'd have like 15, 20 women come up the stairs into this little apartment, which was above the boiler room. And so periodically, you know, long, big noise from the bottom. And they would do consciousness raising groups. And, you know, I remember sometime, you know, looking at my watch saying, ladies, it's 11:30. You should probably go home. But we, you know, it was like we started to relate to different women in that way. And some of those women, I'm thinking right now, I could name five of them who are still active members of Woman Space. And this is like 50 years later. So, you know, it was great fun. It was adventure. And we hardly had any money. We actually have never had more money than we need. We've almost always had exactly what we need, which personally, I take as a sign that we're doing something right. You know, it's like we do not have a big endowment, although that would be so helpful. We're trying to grow it right now. But we've always had just what we need in order to do this work. And I think that says you're doing something right.
Elaine, I don't want to take up your entire afternoon, but, you know, I was thinking about, again, when we talked a while back about the honoring our foremothers event, I was thinking about, again, how it kind of reminded me of some of the things we talk about on this show. And actually, one of the last questions we always ask everyone is to just talk about someone who is an educator in their life, right? Like someone who taught them a lot and, you know, helped them become who they are. And so I thought, especially since we had that conversation earlier on about that event, that it would be really appropriate to kind of end us out in that and, you know, shine that beacon in the air now and give the opportunity to do just that, to talk about, you know, anyone in your life, for a person who we could bring it back to the fuzzy-tailed creatures, but just, again, someone who taught you a lot and helped make you who you are today.
I have two people that I could think of. I'm going to choose one of them. Anybody who knows me will be surprised that I'm not going to name Dorothy Bach, who in my perception was my true life partner, and I learned so much from her. But I am choosing someone else to speak of because my experience with her has just been more recent and more intense in the immediate present. There was a woman whose name was Frances Rothlieber, who was in for the last probably 60 years of my life, one of the most influential people. She was an educator. She lived much of her life in Chicago and then Milwaukee. But in 1975 or so, she moved out to Southern California and ran a center for evolving consciousness out there. And Frances was a person who taught how to tune in to the creative process in your life and to express it in a way that affects humanity. That sounds very generic, but her influence on me and on many others was profound. The reason I chose her is because I just this past year invited her to come and live the last part of her life at my house. She was in hospice care, and she needed to have a place where she would be cared for and where she could continue to express her teachings, but with someone who truly cared about her and cared for her. And so I invited her to live at my house. We raised money to get her here. We raised $18,000 to bring her cross country in a medical transport ambulance. She got here, and it was a wonderful period of time where we had many intense conversations. And in my perception, my role has transformed now. She died, by the way, on August 13th. In my perception, my role is to carry forward the work that she was doing. And one of the ways that I'm planning, hoping to do that, and I've already started to do that, is just to be a presence where people can come and talk and engage in deeper questions that matter, different conversations that matter. And I, you know, it's still fairly recent. I haven't put hugely descriptive words around this. It's still very fresh and very new. And I'm still in the process of grieving for this woman who's been my mentor for my most of my adult life. And I feel not only an obligation, I feel a privilege to carry forward her work. And so that's who I'm choosing.
Oh man, Elaine, that sounds like such a, I mean, caregiving in general, but then also someone who's been your mentor for so long, that sounds like it was a really, I mean, again, let's say intense and like beautiful and hard and kind of all the things.
All the things, yeah. One of the things that was really cool about it is because she came before I was fully retired, I had to enlist some of my woman space community people to come in when, like, if I had a meeting or I had to go someplace or whatever. And so I was able to introduce her to some people who are currently very present to me. And I feel like that was just this great merging of past and present. And that was a wonderful thing. So I know that one of the women that recommended that you talk to me was a former student of mine, Kate Rehack. And she and her husband were two of the people that got to meet my mentor, Frances, and take care of her one afternoon for me. And that was just a great gift. So I love this full circle kind of thing. So,
yeah, absolutely. And yeah. I mean, you said that she was previously living in Southern California, right? Like, mm-hmm. So had you guys had gotten
from Palm Springs to Rockford, Illinois?
Yeah, I was going to say, had you guys been able to spend a lot of like extended time together prior to her moving in, or?
Well, I'll tell you, she's a person that for the last at least 30 years, I've had at least one monthly conversation with her of an hour every month. And then I would go out to visit her for a couple weeks every year. Yeah. And this whole thing started because her birthday was on Valentine's Day. And so I actually flew out to see her on Valentine's Day of 2025. And that kind of started this whole thought process in me about, oh my God, I could be the one to care for her. So anyhow, it played out. It was just way too short. I was looking forward to her being here for Christmas and what. Anyhow, that was not in the cards, but it was a great gift.
Yeah. And again, talk about learning, right?
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. And clearly, this woman considered her mission in life to be an educator. So that's kind of a wonderful full circle way of bringing our conversation to a conclusion here, I think.
I think so, too. Elaine, thank you so much for taking time out of your
afternoon. This was a delight. I really enjoyed this.
That was Elaine Hirschenberger. She is the co-founder and former executive director at Woman Space in Rockford. You can find out more about them at womanspace-rockford.org. And thank you so much for listening to Teacher's Lounge. Truly, this was one of my favorite conversations we've had in a while. As always, feel free to nominate a teacher in your life to be on the show. It's how we get all of our great guests like Elaine. Send them our way to teacherslounge@niu.edu. You could subscribe wherever you're hearing this podcast. Leave us a rating. share it with a friend, share it with a coworker, share it with a cousin, anyone. If you like what we do, it's the best way to help us get even more perspectives on the show. A big thanks to the Northern Illinois band Kind Of for the awesome music you hear each and every episode of this show. And I've been your host, Peter Medlin, and this is Teacher's Lounge.